At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into Redacted. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And that is my lovely wife. It's her birthday today, by the way. And we are back. So happy birthday to my lovely wife, who turns 45 years old today, which
I can't
believe it. She looks like she's 44. No, she looks like she's, she looks like she's like 23 years old. People are like, come on, there's no way.
This is what that looks like. I am 45. Feels good.
So glad to see all of you guys. It's been a nice little time off spending with the extended family, but we are back and school is about to get started again. So it's work season. Get into that September time period. It's Virgo season. It's back to work.
Yeah.
It's spreadsheets. It's time.
It's time to put the pedal back to the metal. No more messing around. I'm ready. I don't sound ready. We picked up some viruses on our travels, but I am ready. But I brought the Kathleen Turner voice.
Which
today.
Is very, very deep and sexy on this August 28th. So welcome, everyone. We've got a big news day for you to get to. We're going to look at the very latest on this forever war in Ukraine. United States officials starting to line up to say, yeah, you know what? Well, we're going to be there forever pretty much in Ukraine. That's really the mission. That's the main goal in Ukraine. We'll talk about that. Plus the number of war dead. We've gotten new numbers out over the weekend, and it is staggering, to say the least.
Plus, BRICS has expanded to include 6 new powerhouse countries. We're going to tell you what that means for the BRICS nations and what it means for the G7 nations. Also, censorship in Canada. I know you're shocked. We're going to bring you an update on the Jordan Peterson story. Plus, a new strain of COVID that they say is extra hard on the vaccinated. What?
Yeah. So if you're vaccinated, you better watch out for this new strain of COVID. I mean, this is like, you can't make this stuff up. And that's why you're here. Redacted starts right now. Everybody, welcome in. If you're new to the channel, we are probably one of the only anti-war shows that you are going to find out there on the interwebs. All of the mainstream media, all the corporate media, are fully in the tank for continuing war wherever it finds itself. So we are vehemently anti-war on this show. If you are anti-war, then you've come to the right place. If you are pro-peace, that's what our agenda is on this show. We have no other agenda other than that.
That's right. And we cover the stories that the mainstream media largely ignores or does not want to bring you in totality. We look at things that are uncomfortable, whether we like it or not. We like that you're here. Thank you so much. It's a gift to me on my 45th birthday to see you again. I'm so glad to be back. Also glad to be back writing the newsletter because that is how we spend most of our mornings. And hopefully you enjoy it and maybe you missed it. I had a friend saying she had withdrawals from the Redacted newsletter. I mean, I don't want you to go into convulsions or anything like that, but I do want you to have missed us. I missed you. The Redacted newsletter is totally free subscription. You just head on over to redacted.inc and then put in your email address, and then you'll get that welcome email, and then you click it to verify that you did in fact sign up for the redacted newsletter. And you'll get about three or four stories, a lot of them with original links to the things that we're going to cover in this show later on that day. So you have a way to either study up or verify for yourself, or sometimes maybe you'll think that our take on something was not actually the way that that story came out, and then we can discuss it when you get here for the show. So it is your study guide, it is your compendium, it is your resources, and it is a gift to you. So please do head on over and subscribe to the newsletter. And yeah, thank you for being here.
So go to redacted.inc. It's not .com. Just go to redacted.inc and sign up. Tony M in our chat on our Rumble chat says, my birthday is August 24th, turned 45 this year as well.
Oh, happy we're birthday buds. Okay. Yeah. 45. This is our year, you and me, Tony. It's going to be our year.
Mailmandon 1979 says, glad you guys are back. Happy birthday. Jet Rank says, hello from Lisbon, Portugal. Good to see you as well. And a lot of great people. So if you're on YouTube, say hello. Man, YouTube has really changed the terms of service lately, and they really are clamping down on content. It's amazing. Yeah. Holy smokes. Do you guys see that? I mean, we released some deep interviews and this week, and they age-restricted stuff. They demonetized us. I mean, they're really on a rampage lately. I thought it might get better.
We're going to talk later about...
Yeah, they wouldn't.
Go ahead, Philip.
Go ahead.
I was going to say they flagged one video, like demonetized one video, because it had... I just showed pictures of rubble from the Christchurch earthquake, and they said it was like bodily harm. And I was like, where? There was literally no... Like, it's just rubble. And they're like, nope, can't have it.
So you can't show rubble... You can't show protests anymore. You can't, I don't know. It's crazy what you can't talk about on this platform. It's
well,
crazy.
We're going to talk about some of the new restrictions around medical misinformation, because I am extremely concerned, because if you've watched over the summer, there's been at least three new FDA approvals that we have gone over. For instance, the RSV vaccine, the RSV injection for small babies, and the postpartum depression pill that were all fast-tracked. And we went over the clinical trials or lack thereof and just looked at how those things were tested. But they were, in fact, recommended by governing bodies such as the FDA. And so now YouTube has updated their medical misinformation guidelines. And I am very concerned that just presenting you that official information may be something that they don't like, that we may not be able to do from here on out. And so in the last story, when we talk about the new strain of COVID today, we're going to look at specifically how we can continue to talk about these things and how I'm going to have to sort of jump around them while we're still on these platforms. Now, I would like to remind you that we are on Rumble, and on that platform, we are not restricted to what we say, and we are not restricted to looking at clinical trials. So I think those things are increasingly important, and I hope you'll stick with us. If you are watching us on Rumble already, power to you. That's a platform. At least, there is a place where free speech is allowed.
All right, well, let's get to the news, and let's start with this. The United States appears ready to admit its true intentions in Ukraine. It was never about the people. It was never about the freedom of Ukraine at all. That was, of course, a joke. Remember when Kamala Harris stood up and said, we're going into Ukraine, we're supporting Ukraine for democracy.
When America stands for her principles.
Yeah, we're standing for democracy. Right. We're standing for freedom, right? Our principles. Yeah. That's what it was never about that. They could care less about the people of Ukraine. They could care less about the freedom of the people of Ukraine. They don't care about that at all. Rather, its true intentions, though, are to create a forever war in Ukraine, something we've been warning about here on this show for many, many months, and a singular goal with that forever war, which is to degrade and destroy Russia's capacity to fight. That is it, full stop. That's the mission. Over the weekend, we got some fresh insights and corroboration of that from journalists, but also members of the United States Congress and military leaders about their intentions to support the most corrupt government in Europe for many, many years to come. So here is Bronco Marcetic over at the Responsible Statecraft. He does a good job summarizing last week's movements. Are U.S. officials signaling a new forever war in Ukraine? You already know the answer to that. So here's what Bronco says. He says, this increasingly looks to be the case. On Saturday, the Financial Times reported that the United States officials are privately girding for what increasingly looks like a war of attrition that will last well into next year. echoing an earlier Wall Street Journal report that military strategists and peacemaker policymakers across the West are already starting to think about next year's spring offensive and about how to prepare for a protracted conflict. So they're already thinking about next year's spring offensive, because the first, you know, the first release of that spring offensive was a real hit. So we're already thinking about the sequel. We're already planning the sequel for this one. On Saturday, I mean, we had this information now from the Financial Times, then the Wall Street Journal. And now this is the front page of the Wall Street Journal just a few days ago. The Wall Street Journal cites a number of U.S. officials who say why Russia's war in Ukraine could run for years. And I love they call it Russia's war in Ukraine, when the only reason it's being protracted and elongated is because of NATO. In the extension of it, that's the reason it could run for years. It's not because Russia wants to extend it for years. It's because NATO does. That's its true intentions.
Well, let's not forget who has been funding the war in Ukraine since 2014. That is the International Monetary Fund. Europe and the United States has been funding Ukraine bombing the Donbas since 2014. Also, they were supporting those same people going into Crimea, which Russia stopped. Right. And so who's war? Who was Ukraine has been at war for a decade now. So,
right. Well, yeah, exactly. And someone in the chat says, well, a forever war means just extending it into 2024. No, because that's just that's like if you had a scale of like when someone says, how far in the future do you think this is going to go? Well, it could extend into 2024, but we're going to get into the details of other policymakers who see this going on for many, many years to come. So how many of you, show of hands, honestly believe that this, that the United States, NATO, full stop, they're out of Ukraine in 2024? How many people? Just a show of hands, let us know in the chat, yes or no. Do you think this is over in 2024, or does this extend for many, many years? And not in the sense like trench warfare, but like a permanent garrison state continues in perpetuity funding a military operation in Ukraine. Think about that in the long term. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say Afghanistan is a forever war. That was 20 years. Mm-hmm. And make no mistake, we are still there and we will never leave. We're not there officially ever, but we have a base. We have all this. So we're always going to be there. So that is a forever war.
Yeah. And when U.S. taxpayer dollars go to fund things in Afghanistan or Iraq, we're building another base in Iraq. But that war is over. Mission accomplished in Iraq. So what more evidence do you need of a forever war? And so again, the Wall Street Journal is saying this could run on for many, many years to come. And they cite a number of U.S. officials who admit Ukraine can never win this war. They say they can never win this war, but they can't have Russia win it either. There's the rub, right? Therefore, it will drag on for years to come.
But we recently talked about this with Ramzi Baroud. What happens then is that is the template that happened to the Middle East, right? Mm-hmm. Where we saw previously prosperous places or places that at least had, a lot of more advanced civilization than we like to think they had, Libya, Syria, right? Places that were advancing their GDP, advancing their standard of life, and then dragged through the rubble. And so we have to think, people who are European residents, is that our future, right? Is that what's happening next? That what is what will happen to Ukraine? Will that then spread like the plague west?
That's the real concern. Absolutely right. And as the warden in our chat here on YouTube says, you know damn well it's going to be longer. Yeah, it's not going into 2024. You know damn well it's going to be much, much longer.
People in the West will be able to think like, oh, Ukraine, it wasn't ever really that great before anyway. And now it's a war zone. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And we will forget the same way we forget that Syria was prosperous, that Libya was prosperous. More prosperity. Please go ahead. Sorry.
Tell me a place that the United States has established a presence and then left. Tell me one place. Because once we establish a presence, we do not leave.
No, it's like Hydra, and it reaches its tentacles into everything. Where do we go that we... Oh, Japan? No, sorry. Philippines? No. You can't think of a place.
The moon?
The moon... Yeah, there's one. There's one, although...
The
moon base. So what's important to understand is that everything is going, though, according to plan. And on the Ukrainian side of things, Ukraine was never meant to win this war. That was never part of the plan. That, there was never a chance that that was ever going to happen to begin with. The United States and its NATO allies have been using Ukraine since 2014. Actually, before that, but really in earnest in 2014, from the very beginning after installing a puppet government to do its bidding, all with the singular purpose that is now coming directly into view. It was never about Ukraine's freedom. It was always about using Ukrainian men as cannon fodder to try to degrade Russia's military. And one of Ukraine's neo-Nazi military leaders admits that this was always the plan. Watch, this is really telling.
Не тому, що ми хороші, як нам кажуть, нам помагає Захід, бо вони хочуть нам блага, тому що ми виконуємо задачі Заходу. Тому що ми єдині, хто готові їх виконувати, бо нам весело, нам прикольно убивати і прикольно воювати. І вони думають, вау, давайте вже ну, подивимося, що це буде. Тому виник цей новий альянс, про який зараз говорять, там Туреччина, Польща, Британія, Україна. Тут ми тут флагман. Тому що ми затіяли війну, якої не було вже останніх 60 років. Так от.
Yeah, so we are the flagmen. This was the plan. This was the plan all along. It's an unbelievable statement that we knew we were being used in this way. So give us, we have all of these guys who are like kind of bloodthirsty. Here's an idea, give them all weapons. So they knew it from the beginning that all of these Nazis running around, what if we gave them weapons and told them, hey, why don't you guys go shoot some Russians? You know, go right now you guys are using baseball bats, but what if we fund, what if NATO stepped in and gave you guys some weapons? How would that sound? Oh, we would love that. That was all part of the plan. And did it work? Well, in fact, it, of course, provoked the war in Ukraine. In fact, the very same year that the United States and NATO allies backed the coup in Ukraine, which overthrew a democratically elected government and installed a puppet regime to do the West's bidding, the BBC, of all networks, did the unthinkable. They released a documentary and a report on the rise of neo-Nazis in Ukraine. They didn't know it at the time, that the United States and its allies were actively supporting these groups to carry out these attacks against the people living in eastern Ukraine at the time, stoking a war with Russia. But again, this is something, this is not some right-wing publication. This is the BBC. Watch this report on the rise of neo-Nazis. Watch.
In place of the defiant speeches, the somber strains of Beethoven now ring out over Independence Square. This revolution is moving into a new phase. But amidst the flowers and the children's tributes, flashes of something more sinister. Groups of armed men strut through the square with dubious iconography.
Dubious.
That yellow armband is a Volksangel, a German symbol used by several SS divisions during the Second World War. Far-right graffiti is appearing, daubed on the walls of the city. A group calling itself the Right Sector is perhaps the largest. Its members can be seen marching around Kiev in columns of about a dozen. Mostly they carry baseball bats.
And then NATO had an idea. Hey, what if we take away those baseball bats? You know, those are ineffective. You can only hit or kill one person at a time, really, unless you line up a whole bunch of people. What if we gave them guns? NATO's brilliant, right? And what if we gave them javelin missiles? What if we gave them other things that could really wreak havoc and create a genocide, really? That's exactly what the U.S. did, using these men to provoke a war with Russia. And they knew exactly what they were doing. The first part of the plan is working. It has worked. Ukrainian men are being utterly destroyed. Here is the new report out today, this new numbers today, from the Meat Grinder, show that at last week alone, Ukraine lost over 4,855 men. Just wrap your heads around that for a minute. Just I always, when you think about these numbers like that, just keep that up on the screen for a second. Just think about like going to a baseball game or something like that. It helps me to think in terms of like going to a stadium or something like that. And think about 4,855 men in that stadium destroyed over the past week. That is what we're dealing with here. And just 785 men killed on Saturday, as they continue to push this BS, you know, this BS counteroffensive idea, pushing them forward. So the first part of the plan of the Meat Grinder is working. NATO is killing Ukrainians faster than they can make them. Senator Mitt Romney is very happy about this. His plan is working as a Raytheon man himself. As he reminds Americans, no Americans are dying in our fight against Russia. It's Ukrainians that are dying. He loves it. Watch.
Being able to take an amount which equals, what, about 5% of our military budget? But actually less than 5% of our military budget each year to help the Ukrainians is about the best national defense spending I think we've ever done. We're losing no lives in Ukraine. And the Ukrainians are fighting heroically against Russia that has 1,500 nuclear weapons aimed at us. It's like, so we're diminishing and devastating the Russian military for a very small amount of money relative to what we spend in the rest of defense. A weakened Russia is a good thing. And the best thing we can do for America is to see people who have nuclear weapons aimed at us getting weaker.
That's so, racism.
And it's also a lie that we're degrading the United States. We heard
when
literally
you let other people die in your cause.
Yeah.
That's racism.
We heard from the, you know, the European theater, the head of that, saying in general, saying absolutely not. That's not the case at all. That Russia's army is not being degraded at all. In fact, it's become stronger as a result of this. Go ahead, Philip.
I was just going to say that like I thought the whole point of proxy war was that you keep quiet about it. You know what I mean? Like you're not supposed to come right out and say, right, hey, you're fighting our proxy war for us. Good job, buddy. I mean, that's just like, at that point, it's just borderline evil.
But who are we hiding it from at this point? Because Ukrainians know it. I mean, Ukrainians know they are being used by the United States. The Ukrainians know they are being used by NATO. Ukrainians are not stupid. They know they're being used. They know they're being thrown into the meat grinder and being handed all of this money and weapons. Go ahead, David.
That's where my question comes in. It's like they talk about this offensive. But what do these men think they're going to do if they've seen what's happening? This many people are dying. How are any of them still even wanting to push forward?
They don't.
You can only force them so much.
They don't. That's why we see, you know, people defecting.
Desertions, yeah.
That's why they don't have the choice. This is their slaves.
Entire mechanized brigades being wiped away. I mean, just I was going down a laundry list of the entire, like a number of different brigades that just totally wiped away. You know, tank units, everything just destroyed.
Yeah.
Armored vehicle units just destroyed. So, of course, they...
If in any way we are able to see them as other than us, then that is modern day racism. That is not like, oh, but it's just not us, then that's okay, right? And it's the same way that we were able to see anyone Middle Eastern as other. It's not us. We don't relate to them as human beings. And then that makes it okay because we can arm distance these wars like this, then, like, I don't want to hear anything about any other, like, microaggressions of racism if we literally can say it's okay that something that's other than us is dying.
So Mitt Romney is very happy about this. I mean, no American lives have been lost in this proxy war that we know of, right, that have been published, right? NATO gets to kill Ukrainians, which they love doing, to carry out their war against Russia. And again, it was all part of this plan. The Washington Post reporting yesterday that most senior U.S. officials want to keep supporting the proxy war against Russia and are not looking for any kind of peace plan at all, despite the knowledge that their paltry counteroffensive hasn't done anything at all except kill Ukrainian men. And in a separate Washington Post report, U.S. intelligence officials admit that Ukraine's offensive will fail.
So it's not got to be past tense now.
It's so stupid.
Who are they fooling?
But they're trying to push on. So even these like small little incremental movements, it's costing them tens of thousands of lives. Oh, so they take over a small village, which serves really no military strategic importance at all. And these people are being wiped away. I think it's so important. It's not about Russia and Ukraine. It really is about NATO using these people and the United States using these people to further its own aims. Like, when are people going to wake up about this proxy war? It's never about freeing Ukraine. It was never about democracy in Ukraine. If it were about democracy in Ukraine, then Biden would be outraged that Zelensky canceled elections in Ukraine, which he did recently. And Zelensky now knows he's losing favor with the West, right? As ex-CIA Larry Johnson has pointed out on our show and others, that Zelensky's about to be thrown under the bus. Europe is tiring of him. So he's about to be thrown under the bus, and he knows this. So he's calling the West's bluff now. Zelensky is calling their bluff, saying, sure, okay, I'll hold elections if the U.S. government will pay me $5 billion Ukrainian dollars to carry it out, which is like $125 million. Yeah, I'll do it, but you guys have to fund the elections, So he's calling their bluff. Watch.
Я і Лінці сформулював дуже швидко, і він був дуже задоволений. Якщо наші парламентарі готові, чому? Тому що нам потрібні тоді зміни до законодавства у виборчий кодекс. Якщо я сказав йому, ви готові мені дати 5 мільярдів, тому що я не людина, яка займається бруківкою, і не зможу просто забрати з бюджету 5 мільярдів, мені здається, саме така сума потрібна на проведення виборів. В звичайний час, а у військовий я не знаю, що це за сума, тому я йому сказав, якщо Сполучені Штати Америки разом з Європою дадуть нам фінансову підтримку, вибачте, я нічого не прошу, проводити вибори в кредит я не буду, забирати гроші від зброї і давати їх на вибори також не буду. І це передбачено законодавством. Є моменти за кордоном. Тут нам потрібно, щоб допомогла в більшості своїй Європі, тому що України сьогодні в більшості в Європейському Союзі, і там треба відкривати. У нас таких інфраструктурних спроможностей немає. Там треба відкривати відповідні можливості, щоб люди прийшли.
So
that's awful. That's awful.
So you need to pay us so we can hold elections.
Can you imagine though? Like, you have a husband or a son, and they will be dragged into war because of this leader that you have no opportunity to vote out.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is your leader. And you can see interviews all across Ukraine. When you actually have people who are doing interviews and talking to actual citizens, they're calling the guy an absolute moron. Come to my town and see what you've done to my town, to my buildings, to the people that have all died in this town because of you.
And people will die.
And no wonder he doesn't want to hold elections.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and he said something also very telling to me there, where he said holding elections under martial law. So does that mean the military would be out there regulating the elections, making people show up, not allowing people that they didn't want to? You know how they pretty much eliminated some parties? Like, under martial law, I think an election would be, you know,
a farce.
That's a really good point.
A farce.
Yeah.
Because he's used martial law to shut down churches, to shut down opposition parties, to shut down media. So, you know, there's no telling what kind of elections would even be there. But if if you're someone who thinks like, look, I need my family to not be dragged into war, and so we need peace leaders for peace, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that someone who stands for peace is elected. You don't even have that opportunity to try.
So America's getting the best bang for our buck. Like, just pay us and we'll hold elections. Like, that's what we trust.
We can afford to have regular elections. Peacetime elections, we can afford. The wartime elections, we need a ton of money.
Yeah. But what about the 100 or 200 billion we've already sent you? Can you take some of that money out of there, or no? Is that already gone into the pockets of
people? I mean, we paid for a coup, you know, to overturn the election in the first place, or overturn the government in 2014. We paid for that.
Yeah, as Victoria, and she's not just saying that as like a funny aside, like Victoria Nuland openly admitted to the amount of money that we funneled into Ukraine to carry out basically the Maidan coup and, you know, put in a puppet regime. So, I mean,
we can afford it. This is the government we want. That's why we're not stepping up for it.
Meanwhile, there's people getting $700 in Maui and are sleeping on the sides of, convenience stores that didn't burn down in Hawaii because, you know, this is a priority right now. America is getting the best bang for its buck in their election in Ukraine, enriching the lives of Mitt Romney and Raytheon, using Ukrainians to do it, while at the same time trying to degrade Russia, which has failed miserably. So there's your war. That's what's your forever war is going to continue on. And it's going to enrich the people like Mitt Romney, and it's going to crush average Ukrainians for many, many years to come. We've got more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at this BRICS meeting, because talk about the U.S. dollar and the de-dollarization process that's unfolding. The huge BRICS summit just wrapped up, and we are going to deep dive what this means for the U.S. dollar and U.S. hegemony worldwide. Are African nations going to be teaming up with Russia and China, settling oil transactions in the Chinese yuan or the Russian ruble or their own currency, being able to keep their own resources where the United States is not able to invade those countries? We're going to look at the update on BRICS and so much more. But first,
we're going to tell you about our friends over at Nom Nom, because let's talk about something nicer, like your pets. your furry friends. If your pet is a member of the family, then don't feed them like they're in the doghouse. Give them Nom Nom. Nom Nom delivers fresh food with every portion personalized to your doggy's needs, so you can bring out their best. Nom Nom's made with real whole food that you can see and recognize without any additives or fillers that can contribute to bloating and low energy. That's because Nom Nom uses the latest science and insights to make real good food for dogs. Their nutrient-packed recipes are crafted by board-certified veterinary nutritionists, made fresh, and shipped to your door. Nom Nom's already delivered over 40 million meals to good dogs like yours, inspiring millions of clean bowls and wagging tails. Plus, Nom Nom comes with a money-back guarantee. So if your dog isn't wagging their tail in 30 days, Nom Nom will refund your order. So right now, go to give this a try and you'll get 50% off your no risk 2-week trial at trynom.com/redacted. You see it right there on the screen. That's trynom.com/redacted. And you will get 50% off and your dog will love it and you will not want to give them anything else. So give it a try one more time. That's trynom.com/redacted.
Well, the biggest threat to the U.S. dollar dominance, I think, can be summed up with one acronym, and that acronym is BRICS. Although if you listen to the Western media talk about BRICS, they downplay its significance. The U.S. dollar is fine, nothing to see here. The rise of China, the rise of Russia, this partnership is of no concern to the United States. Really? That's really interesting. Last week in South Africa, the BRICS coalition of Russia, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa saw its biggest expansion yet, adding 6 new countries to its expanding list. Journalist Mike Jones joins us now to look at the BRICS summit, its larger implications. And Mike, I got to say, it is amazing to sort of look at the Western media coverage of this, in the United States at least. There's almost no coverage of it, very little coverage, and very little concern about the U.S. dollar dominance as it relates to BRICS. What are you seeing in terms of Europe and other parts of the world?
In terms of Europe, particularly I've looked at the British media today, The Guardian and in The Independent, they have both got articles on it. Larry Elliott in The Guardian did talk a lot about the U.S. hegemony and the dollar and its behavior in particular. I also referenced the behavior of the G7 and how this very exclusive sort of attitude and pushing away countries has perhaps helped BRICS and helped these nations that want to be a part of what is a very inclusive organization. President Putin, in his speech, talked about how one of its founding principles is cooperation and working with people. Back during the days of COVID, when the G7 countries hoarded the vaccines, it caused a lot of animosity among certainly the developing countries. Here we see particularly African nations benefiting from Russia and China investing in them. So there are these two very different and very polarizing aspects. But on that same tone, Putin has said that we are not against anyone. We are working with to raise people up and not sort of take commodities out of countries, which you can imagine was very positive for the African countries. But the coverage in the West that I've seen, as you say, minimalist, sort of downplaying it, talk of this single currency. The Larry Elliott in his article in The Guardian sort of said the talk of a single BRICS currency is for the birds.
This idea that, of course, and they've been doing this quietly since 2009, really, which has been buying up gold. And China and Russia have been buying up gold. They've been stockpiling gold. They've been, pushing towards this BRICS currency, which is backed by commodities, right? Actual tangible things that you can pull out of the ground, things that these countries are very rich in. The United States currency, of course, backed by nothing. It's backed by debt, actually, and military might. That's how the U.S. dollar is built. It's on debt and military muscle. And so for these BRICS nations to say, we want you to keep your sovereignty, we want you to keep your minerals, we're not going to come in and basically rape your countryside and steal your minerals, it seems like a breath of fresh air, no?
Absolutely. And you only need to look at the recent example of the French government's actions with Niger. Right. Niger rising up and kicking out the colonialist or former colonialist masters who were taking commodities out of their country, and this very aggressive action. And this comes down to energy, which is a big part of BRICS. We're talking not just nuclear, we're talking hydrocarbons, gas, oil, etc. Not just energy either, food as well. President Putin in his speech referenced the fact that the world's population is due to rise by 1.7 billion by, I think he said 2025. So the increase in energy demands, and that is kind of what BRICS is based on, many of these hydrocarbon producers and exporters. I think it was the Visual Capitalist who did a great rundown of the real ramifications of the addition of these six countries into BRICS. We're talking about 44% of the world's oil production. Now, as much as the Western media might like to downplay that, that's got to be of concern to certainly the US and the de-dollarization process of the petrodollar.
Yeah, it's a massive expansion. And I think looking at these visualization charts just really drives it home. I'm such a visual person. So when I see it in those, you know, stark terms, it's pretty remarkable. What were some of the other big takeaways? So we talked about the grain deal, we talked about Africa, and of course, Putin doubling down on his position of like sovereignty in Africa, that we will cooperate, we won't come in and steal your resources. But of course, you have this new expansion now, the six additional countries moving in, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, et cetera. What were some of the other big takeaways to your mind covering this big event?
The big takeaways was also on a geopolitical and almost reconciliation sort of aspect, where with the addition of Iran and Saudi Arabia, you know, these were two former rivals, and Joe Biden has done brilliant work in reconciling Saudi Arabia, right, as it's been pointed out by others.
How are they friends now? I mean, this is unbelievable, right? And they're joining BRICS together. It's really a remarkable moment.
There we go. And I believe that's the role of China that has helped step in there as a mediator. Then if you look at China and India, now those are two sort of founding members of BRICS anyway, but they have their tensions as well, where Russia has been a mediator between those two countries. The Western media has liked to poke at that and say, oh, well, the more members you have, the more chances there are for disagreement and problems. But that doesn't appear to be the case in this multipolar world and how it's operating. So that is going to cause more concern. We then see the expansion into South America of Argentina. I believe they were brought on board at the request of Brazil. Mm-hmm. But these are economies with huge potential. Let's not forget Ethiopia. Its economy is in double digits. It had a lot of potential until recently. Iran as well. This new sort of trading block allows it to not, you know, get outside of US sanctions, but now it has this potential trade boom that it can cooperate in. I saw a lot of Iranian products at the Army Expo Forum in Moscow. I'm not just talking about defense industry production, but we can talk about, you know, a lot more other commodities as well, that these countries stand to mutually benefit from with the inclusion of those. I think certainly adding in Argentina was a big one. Adding in Ethiopia was, I believe, South Africa's request. There's more, obviously, more interest from other African nations. I believe, actually, the total of non-official interest in joining BRICS currently stands at 50 countries. The caveat to that is not all heads of state have actually, you know, confirmed that. But that gives you some idea of just how much weight is now getting behind this movement. Like it's been termed, it used to be a club. Now you're looking at a fully fledged organization, importantly, with its own bank. And even, as I say, Western media acknowledging that, in contrast to the IMF, that often has these crippling conditions in exchange for sovereign wealth, the BRICS bank is almost no strings attached. I believe, was it not Janet Yellen who warned against dealing with the BRICS bank, saying, just beware?
Yeah, just beware. And I'm not a believer in coincidences, because just as we have this meeting, this expansion of these BRICS nations, you see, of course, the United States ramping up again the rhetoric around China in the South China Sea. China must be challenged. Of course, that came this weekend. We see the trouble in the Philippines unfolding. So I don't think that this is a coincidence that you're starting to see the United States really push for agitation with China. Because you listen to any U.S. official, they're playing out these war games in the United States against China by 2025. They're predicting a war with China. We need to take military action against China. This is their biggest threat. They've long said it. And I think you're seeing it now more than ever with this expansion of BRICS. I'm curious, talk about the military support here, because you have these countries now joining this. What sort of a military kind of friendly relationship will they have with Russia and China if there's U.S. meddling in their territories?
That's a really good question. If you think of all the meddling that happened quite close to the U.S. in South America, those right. countries, you know, they're not going to be too happy about it. Africa, I don't think Somalia has been particularly pleased with U.S. meddling there either.
Airstrikes over the weekend, killing 13 people in Somalia, right? So the amount of meddling in Ethiopia, the list is endless. So you expand into BRICS. Does that offer some sort of a godfather protection against the United States meddling?
Let's look at Africa as an example with Wagner in its presence there, especially with Niger, Burkina Faso, the very friendly relations that Africa has built with Wagner and by extension then Russia as well. It's difficult to say with any certainty, but you can see how sort of behind the scenes certain mechanisms can be employed if you are leaning towards this direction. And I'm sure that under the table there are agreements that can and will be made in that regard. So I think I think this is kind of almost karmic now. We've had since the Second World War this behavior, this domination of the petrodollar, but certainly this bullying behavior that President Putin called out in his speeches at the BRICS summit, not just then, but on many occasions before. This is really resonating with these nations. And again, I'll reference the fact that the G7 and the G20 are very exclusive. You know, these have to be leading industrial economies, generally looking at finance markets, not really anything that's useful for developing countries, even like Indonesia as well, which has been expressing an interest, I believe, in BRICS too. These economies actually want something useful and to be a part of something that benefits them. And we're seeing these different, like Ethiopia, I believe, could also be a big food producer as well. Egypt needs food. Russia, a big food producer. So there's just logical relationships that will form there and, of course, form bonds, which then help with this mutual cooperation to build a far more prosperous world outside of the indebted enslavement that the U.S. seems to impose wherever it goes. And the G7 seems to represent, and, you know, the likes of Trudeau and Canada in their rhetoric, talking about exploitation of these smaller developing nations.
I'll get you out of here on this, Mike. You live in Russia. How is the Russian media covering the events of South Africa and the expansion of BRICS? And what are the people, you know, just at cafes and in Moscow and walking around talk about and seeing this expansion of BRICS? How is it being played there?
Obviously, it's very positive. Obviously, I went to the Russia-Africa summit as well. So given that this was chaired by South Africa, Africa was quite a heavy focus on it. It's obviously very positive because once again, Putin's words are now ringing true and bearing fruit, if you like. We've talked in the context of the special military operation in the years where he warned about the West's behavior and their deceit. Now that's sort of spilling out and over into the world of these other countries that are acknowledging the truth behind what he's warned about. Then take it further with these alternative systems and deals, trade agreements, investments overseas. They're all bearing fruit now. So this is all very positive for not just the Russian economy either, but these member states as well. So it's kind of reinforcing the truth, the policy, and the direction that Russia is going in. And it doesn't matter how much the West screams and cries that the economy is in tatters, it's not. It's growing, and people's lives are getting better and better as a result of this guidance and this leadership.
This cannot be sitting well in Washington. We'll be covering it very, very closely. It'll be interesting to see what the Western response is, because they can't be sitting. They've got to have a plan here. They've got to be sitting back thinking, we've got to do something about this. You're literally watching the collapse of the U.S. dollar. It's not going to happen overnight, but the foundation is now laid, and this expansion is a major threat to U.S. dollar dominance.
Annalena Baerbock, if I may just comment, to see a contrast in the German politics, she was very quick to downplay and brush this development from BRICS off. And yet, I believe it is Reinhard Butkofer, the same member of her party, talking about what a massive geopolitical shift this is and will be, and the ramifications it will invariably have, particularly on Germany and the EU. And again, when we talk about Germany's position with gas and commodities, I'm more inclined to agree with Reinhardt, who, as I stress, is a member of the same party as Annalena Baerbock.
Yeah, just look at the amount of money that they're now having to spend on fuel resources, and how many companies have now closed their doors because they can't afford the manufacturing, the fuel to keep their doors open in Germany. So I think you're right about that. Mike Jones, great to see you. Thank you for the insights on this BRICS summit. This was the big one. This was the first big face-to-face meeting since the pandemic, now adding 6 new members to its ranks with 40 to 50 more countries waiting in the wings to join it. This is a major moment. Mike, thanks. Great to see you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Mike. You know, it's interesting to think about some of the bullying that's taken place with, like, Mexico. Mexico was, of course, going to push forward with, you know, BRICS membership. And then suddenly members of the United States Senate were like, hey, what if we invaded Mexico to take out those drug cartels? What if we started sending troops to Mexico? You know, that was a veiled threat against them trying to align themselves with Russia and China and the BRICS nations.
Blurring the lines between, like, economic blocks and defensive military summits.
Yeah.
Money is war at this point. Like, it's hard to tell them apart.
But as someone in our Rumble chat here, see, Vidar Kjer Odinson, I like that, Odinson. By the way, isn't that like the Norwegian, you name your, if you are son of Odin and you're Odinson.
Yes.
Yeah. So Vidar Kjer Odinson in our Rumble chat says, BRICS cannot even trade yet. Military alliance? Question mark. Ah, ha, 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 ha.
Right.
So very good point. But, you know, you have to think, this has just started 2009. And look at how large this has already become.
Right.
And look at the size of the GDP of these BRICS nations compared to the United States, and how this is about to supplant the U.S. dollar for settling in petrodollar versus the petrodollar and settling oil transactions. Like, yes, all of these pieces aren't here yet, but you're watching it unfold right before our eyes. So military alliance, how far off is that? I'd love to hear. Let me know in the chat. How far off do you think a military alliance is for some of these BRICS nations? Against NATO.
If we had not been bullies and the policemen of the world, we wouldn't be in this situation. It's because of the, like, anybody that borrows any kind of money from us, there's all kinds of stipulations. That it's kind of like The Godfather. I'm going to do you a favor, but I'm going to come calling. And when I come calling for a favor in return, you better be willing to do it, or we're going to, you know, or take your money and your resources.
Or there'll be a horse head in your bed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You wake up and see that. Yeah. So anyway, I'm fascinated by the BRICS. I think we're at a really interesting moment. And I think if you're not paying attention to what's happening with BRICS, you're missing the boat. I think it's a really, really fascinating moment and a really, really important moment for the U.S. dollar.
Well, especially because the United States dollar is not backed by gold. It's backed by Saudi Arabian oil. And that alliance, right, to fall out of favor means that it's backed by even less. It really is like the rug coming out from under this global currency. Philip, what are you trying to say?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, Phil, it's not even backed by Saudi Arabian oil. I mean, yes, we settle transactions with the U.S. dollar in Saudi Arabian oil, in oil transactions as the petrodollar, but that ship has sailed. It's not even backed by that. It's only backed by debt. The U.S. dollar is only backed by debt and U.S. military force.
Right, but that alliance, which was sort of cheated out from under France and other countries that were competing to be the global dollar, the global currency, right, we've covered this before. Yeah, and so, like, it really is the rug being pulled out from under that currency. Philip, please go ahead and say what you're going to say. I hope you didn't forget.
Oh, I was just going to say that wasn't India just recently made, like, a major oil deal, something like a $1 billion oil deal, and they paid in rupees. And it was, like, a huge to-do because they didn't pay in dollars. So, I mean, it's if you're thinking they can't trade, I mean, they kind of can. I mean, it's already happening.
Yeah.
Like, once they start buying oil in rupees and rubles, you know, that spells doom.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just reading Carol Roth's book over the break.
It's a new book. It's called You Will Own Nothing.
And she talks about, you know, how this came about and how there were economists inside the U.S., inside the United States that absolutely did not want this, because there is, I can't remember the name of the principle that you cannot, you know, look out for your own interests and the interests of the globe at the same time. It's their competing interests, and this was always going to spell certain death for the U.S. economy. I'm going to have to find what that economic principle is, but, you know, it's almost like it was unavoidable.
Well, we got more news to get to here on your Monday. We've got a lot more news to get to. We're not done yet. We're going to talk about this Jordan Peterson censorship in Trudeau's Canada and going toe-to-toe with the Trudeau government. I can't wait till he takes on the Trudeau government and exposes their social media censorship and what's going to happen there. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Also, the new round of COVID is out. The new variant of COVID is here, and the Biden administration is ramping up demands for perhaps funding a new vaccine. So get ready for a new vaccine, and you've seen a lot of discussion over the past couple of days about potential new lockdowns, concerns about this new variant all over the news. Should they, you know, start to put mask mandates back in place? Today you had Ladapo, the Surgeon General of Florida, say, if someone tells you to wear a mask, absolutely fight against that. That's exactly what he says. We should not be forced to do anything like that ever again. So maybe everyone just needs to move to Florida because that seems to be the place you can get some safety. Anyway, we got more news to get to. We'll get to all of that. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Moomoo, because if you are an investor looking for an easier way to trade stocks, how would you like 16 free stocks? With our friends at Moomoo, it's our favorite trading platform. There's no steep learning curve, and you can learn how to use their simple interface very, very quickly. And guess what? You'll get 16 free stocks right now, just by opening your account and making your initial deposits by using that URL on your screen. Go to redacted.inc/Moomoo. Now, while we were traveling over the past week, I had different alerts set up, and it's great to be able to still plug in and get some news right inside the news section of Moomoo. That you'll be able to follow the companies that you're interested in investing in, set up alerts, get all sorts of real-time data and information and pro-level stuff that you would normally pay for on other platforms. But Moomoo gives it to you for free. So open your free account right now. Get access to zero commission trades, 16 free stocks when you open your account and make your initial deposits. And you're right now going to get a free Tesla or a Google stock when you open your account and make your initial deposits. So go to redacted.inc/Moomoo today. Again, redacted.inc/Moomoo. Someone in the chat, Chev Ken, says, did Clayton dye his hair? No. Camera one. I would never, ever. Can you imagine? I just couldn't imagine doing that. No, I've never dyed my hair. And by the way,
I was actually looking at the Zelensky video and noticing that he recently dyed his hair.
Well, that's a different animal.
I don't think that men do a very good job of matching the color that used to grow out of their head.
No, one thing, well, Natalie and I will watch it, like a movie or something like that, or a TV show. She'll go, that's a hair dye. Or hairpiece, hair dye, and you like point that out on a regular basis.
Just because I don't think men get the right consultation about making their hair look natural. And so Zelensky is a really good example of someone who's gone too dark. And we all can tell that it never grew out of his hair, out of his head, that color.
Yeah,
so,
it's like a fake color. Anyway. Yeah. Clayton, yeah, no, I do not dye my hair. This is there. You can see grays in there. And there's
no, Clayton's got handsome salt and pepper.
I don't dye my hair.
Dye my hair either. So if you're asking,
I dye my eyebrows, but that's because that's what people look at most, and so it makes it look like I have less gray.
No. Take off your glasses and show me.
Dye your eyebrows.
Do you really dye your eyebrows?
No, he doesn't.
No, I do not.
Oh, okay. I don't care if you do or not.
I'm not.
Funny though, yeah, just not that vain. Really black eyebrows, but
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I don't do that either. If you missed it, today is my 45th birthday. And I'm holding on with my hair color. But my grandmother didn't really go gray very much. But I don't mind showing you. I have a little like here. And if it does go gray, I really want it to go like...
Rogue from X-Men?
No, like the mom of Draco Malfoy, Sissy Malfoy, where it just kind of goes in that one streak. So, but whatever, you know, this is what 45 looks like. And I'm taking it as it comes. So...
All right.
Anyhow. All right. Speaking of taking it as it comes, let's talk about Trudeau's Canada, where you can say nothing Professionals in Justin Trudeau's Canada do not have the right to say if they what they want, if Jordan Peterson is any example. Now, probably you know who Jordan Peterson is, but if you don't, he's a psychologist in Canada who's made a name for himself by saying things online. A lot of things that have panned out turned out to be true, but he says them in a kind of in-your-face way. I'm going to say I like him a whole lot. He's kind of wild. And because in this world where I'm used to people walking on eggshells, usually when he says something, I'm like, whoa, you said that. And then I just kind of watch like this, like, okay, yeah, say that, because we're not supposed to say that. For instance, this controversial tweet that he said in 2022 that he was at his daughter's wedding in California, and he blamed Justin Trudeau's travel ban, saying that his travel ban is the reason that my father, the grandfather of the bride, was not here. And he was pissed about it. He was disciplined for this, for saying that, like, I feel this personally. This travel ban has kept my father from traveling to an important family event. And I blame you, politician Justin Trudeau. Here's another thing he said when this Sports Illustrated plus size model came out. He says, sorry, I don't think that this is beautiful. Now, obviously, you know, that feels hurtful to people who have plus size bodies. But what he feels is that we are being asked to accept increasingly unhealthy body perceptions, and he refuses to. So yeah, does that feel a little jarring as a woman? Sure. But do I have the right to say, no, you find that beautiful? You must be sexually attracted to that? No, right? And so these are things that we are increasingly not allowed to say. You know, and he does more than just rabble-rousing. For example, he did a lengthy interview on the Birth Gap documentary that I found eye-opening. You know, he's wild like that. I like it. He was very early to warn about the dangers of gender ideology in the biopharmaceutical complex. And now the College of Psychologists of Ontario says that because of this online behavior, he has to go through behavior modification. You know, it harkens to these sort of post-apocalyptic movies where you're reprogramming someone's brain for wrongthink. They're calling it specified continued education or remedial program, or SCRP. That's what we're going to call it. Go ahead, Philip.
I was just going to say, are they calling it behavior modification? Is that the words they use, or did they use their SCRP?
They're calling it SCRP. So specifically, specified continued education or remedial program. So they want to remediate. So what do you think when, like, we need to change that, make it better, or make you apologize? What are those words mean to you? Remediate. And they want to do this specifically regarding his public statements. We covered this 6 months ago when this directive came out, and he fought it. He appealed it. And this judgment was just handed out late last week by the Superior Court of Justice. This means that a court has decided that a psychologist can be subjected to reprogramming for saying controversial things or else risk losing his license. You know, it doesn't really matter that much to Jordan Peterson. He doesn't necessarily need to keep this license active. He hasn't seen patients since 2017. He has a big media brand that he can use to earn a living for the foreseeable future. But it matters because if he can't say these things, think of all the people who are not Jordan Peterson who are being silenced in much smaller ways.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why it matters. That's why he's fighting this. It's because of the closing window of freedom. He responded to this in a video with his daughter. Here's what he says he's going to do since he's lost his appeal.
I am required to undergo the retraining. I will undergo the retraining. And I will tape it. And I will broadcast it. And then everyone else can decide... then everyone else can decide for themselves just exactly what the hell's going on and whether or not I've contemplated my words, whether or not I've thought through everything I say carefully, whether or not I have any grounds for my opinions. You know, I don't say things that I haven't thought about.
All right. So I'm here for that. That is something I think I will watch because I would love to know how the college thinks it should, you know, reprogram someone and make them say they're sorry for things that maybe they hurt their feelings. They're going to have to ask. And I'm going to show you later how they decide whether or not, you know, he's been successful at this. I don't know if they're going to allow it to be taped, but he's saying, okay, let's do this publicly. What's weird about this is the way that it's being coerced. They're saying it's not disciplinary, but he's being forced to do it. Watch.
Look, the millions of people that I'm communicating with, let's say, are prone to complain, but that the college itself decided that that was sufficient grounds to threaten my license and to force me into re-education. Of course, they're not doing it for disciplinary reasons. It's like, what the? I don't even understand what that means. If you're not doing it for disciplinary reasons, it's like, why is it forced? And why am I being upbraided? That's like the definition of disciplinary.
Upbraided.
So that just shows you how mendacious the decision is.
I love that word, upbraided. Why am I being upbraided? It's a great point. If it's not about disciplinary actions, then what is it for?
Right.
Because he's being.
You could lose your license if you don't do it.
Right. And you're being your hand is being slapped.
Yeah.
And you're having to go through this now year-long remediation.
Not only that.
What else is it?
He has to pay for it at his own cost. And they don't know what that is. So look at this directive saying that he has to enter a coaching program with either one or two of two individuals to review, reflect, and or ameliorate his professionalism in public statements. It's to begin within 3 months and to be completed within 12. Costs associated with the coaching are to be borne by him. And unless that coach provides this final report indicating that concerns have been appropriately remediated in the public interest, then Dr. Peterson will not be considered to have successfully complied with SCRP, which may constitute professional. So he has to get a grade. Can you imagine, like, who's going to come in and discipline Jordan Peterson? Because, like I said, he's so wild, and you're going to say, yes, you feel sorry for that. Here's how this hurt people's feelings. You shouldn't say it. Do you agree? And he's going to be like, no, I don't. And I think that this is why freedom of speech is important. So it's impossible to like tame this, right? And here are some of the things that they listed, like tweets. Now, some of them are still rather controversial, and I feel like I should not read them out loud, so I'm just going to put them on the screen. They talk about his appearance on Joe Rogan. They talk about referring to this person as a prick. We still can say that. They talk about him referring to Catherine McKinney, an Ottawa city councillor, as an appalling, self-righteous, moralizing thing. They talk about the Ellen Page tweet. I'm not going to talk about that because we have at length. They talked about the Sports Illustrated saying that that wasn't beautiful. And then one person was talking about overpopulation, and he addresses this. He says he really doesn't like it when people talk about overpopulation as in like, well, the world's too, which, you know, again, it doesn't accurately depict our declining birth rate. And also he feels like that is sort of a racist thing to say. It's like, well, other people should get, you know, should not be able to reproduce, but me, I should be able to say this on Twitter because I'm an upwardly mobile person. Right. And so what he said, well, like you can get off if you want. And the college said, oh, you're counseling to self-harm, which is obviously it was sarcasm, right? Because he doesn't mean like you should step off the planet or hurt yourself. They're taking it very literal. And so the right to sarcasm doesn't even exist. And again, like,
they've lost all sense of humor. You can't say anything. And if you think this is just happening in Canada, it's not. I mean, it's happening. It's happening across Europe with the Digital Services Act, which is now enforceable. And so Canadians, I mean, it's going to be happening in the United States. It's already happening in people being deplatformed and taken off of these social media platforms. So this is not just about Canada.
Right. And how do you tell a man, oh, no, that Sports Illustrated is beautiful. You say it's beautiful now. How do you remediate if he says, I'm sorry, I don't think that this is a beautiful body image, and say, yes, you do. And so you need to go around and apologize to people who
It's ridiculous.
Think that you don't. Here, think
here's
that's
the Sports
beautiful.
Illustrated cover. Here's this. You know. Here's this woman on the front of it. You must think that this is attractive. Sorry, no, I don't. And you're not gonna force me to do that?
Right. Are they ever going to? I mean, the only way I can think is like they're gonna have to Theon Greyjoy into like, you know, your name is Reek. Like, yeah. You know, like this kind of extreme. There's no other way to really make it. I hope that doesn't. I don't. I'm not saying I want that to happen.
Well, and also think. This just is so level know. One, right? So is the yeah. following levels going to end up like a Clockwork Orange, where they're going to have people sitting in chairs with toothpicks holding their eyes open?
Yeah, keeping their eyes open to watch this stuff. You must.
Yeah.
You must see.
You must believe this.
You must see this transgender sports star who's naked now on the front cover of this magazine, and we're celebrating the fact that this person had a double mastectomy. You must think that that's attractive. There's a coffee company in Europe called Costa. I think it's called Costa, and their new advertising campaign is the. It's a caricature of a woman with a mastectomy. Like, we're supposed to accept that as some sort of a beautiful thing. And what if I tweet about that and say I find this incredibly offensive? You're promoting like child mutilation, basically. You're promoting mutilating your body to get a cup of coffee. Would I be wound up in this court in Canada and be forced to go through a remediation training because right. I don't like that?
Yeah. Now, in this video, Peterson says that he could just go get a license somewhere else in Canada outside of Ontario. I guess that's how that works. But that's not the point. The point is he's fighting for the people who can't fight it. Because if they can do it to him, they can do it in many small measures. And presumably they are doing it to a lot of psychologists who may question gender ideology, who may say we shouldn't put kids on these medicines and surgeries, who may say we shouldn't take rights away from parents, and those psychologists become licensed, deplatformed, or risk losing their license. So for every person who gets deplatformed for wrongthink and can't fight it, there is at least Jordan Peterson fighting at the top for the precedence. So for that, I applaud it. You know, you may not think this applies to you because you're not a psychologist and you don't live in Canada. But if you live in a Western country, we are increasingly discouraged from saying what we think. For instance, here's something that happened over the weekend. There was a woman in Britain who got a visit from the police for saying that she likes Redux. Now, that's a media organization that I do follow them and I read. They cover crimes committed by trans-identified men on women. And it's a very serious media organization. And it's usually, it takes a strong stomach to read what they talk about. Now, here's the tweet. She just said everyone should be following and donating to Redux. And she got a police warning about it. Now, here's the statement from what? Redux about it. It said that she's under criminal investigation for calling attention to the behavior of Stephanie Hayden, who's a trans-identified male who was accused of using the courts to silence critics of gender ideology. So she posted about it, and she got a visit from the Surrey police saying that her bail conditions, because she had previous violations, criminal violations, explicitly mentioned that her bail conditions forbid her from publishing things like this. So that's confusing. Like, she can't say that she is against gender ideology as part of her bail conditions.
What?
Right? And so they say, we are concerned about further attacks on her liberty and freedom of speech and disturbed by what seems to be a punishment by proxy. And we are going to monitor this and her visit from the police from what should be her freedom of expression, whether or not she has priors. You know, so these are the kind of authoritarian things that do seem to be coming down the pipeline for all of us. And it is for all of us to say, no, for me, okay, I don't particularly like the Jordan Peterson tweet saying that that's not beautiful about a woman who's curvy or like that. Like, I think there are other ways to say that. But I absolutely want to defend his right to say that. Because I want to live in a place that where you protect the speech that you, even speech you don't like.
Right. Like I'm not somebody who would ever think to take time out of my day to jump online and to make a comment about someone's weight like that. It just wouldn't occur to me to do that. but I have the right to, right?
Right.
And you might not like it. I'm not going to do it, but you might not like it. But that's the speech that we're defending.
Because I think it's more dangerous to not be able to say that
right.
than it is to say that.
If you think this is dangerous, go ahead, David.
Well, I was going to say, and another problem is a lot of people, if you support somebody's free speech, like you say, hey, I support Jordan's right to say that, then all of a sudden they put you in a box of supporting what he said. And that's a huge difference. Like, just because you support somebody's right to say something does not mean you support what they say. And people right. need to make that distinction.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you think it's bad in Canada, which is really, really bad. I was talking to a friend in Canada last night. He said, we don't know what's being kept from us now in Canada. Like, what information is being hidden from us that we just can't even access, which is, can you imagine that? Like, living in a society where you don't even know what's being kept from you. But just think about in Europe.
Yes, I can, because I survived the pandemic.
Yeah, I know. But now you'll know in certainly inside Europe with the Digital Services Act, which is now enforceable by the European Commission as of last week, they will now be able to reach out directly to social media companies and tell them they do not like this particular speech. They do not like this tweet. They do not like this information. They can go to great lengths. They can even take emergency powers during whatever they deem to be an emergency and take over social media. Like, this is now law. This is now enforceable. So it's not just Canada. It's in all of these Western nations, it's becoming increasingly, increasingly scary. This invasion on freedom of speech. And it starts slowly and incrementally, and it just kind of creeps up on you. And then suddenly,
and that's exactly why it's so scary to not say anything. Like, I've seen the United States, Kamala Harris started that coalition, to make, anything negative towards transgender, anything, a hate speech, a hate crime or whatever. So that's why we have, in my opinion, we have to be loud about that stuff, because when we're not, we're like, oh, it's not going to get bad. It's going to go away. We've noticed that does not work.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I just read the Hunger Games prequel, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. And it feels like, it's been maybe 10 years since I started the first ones. And I'm like, man, Pan Am seems kind of familiar.
Right.
The Hunger Games world of not being able to say things actually feels more familiar now than when I started that trilogy. So it's up to us to speak for all speech, even speech we don't like. So we're here for it. We're doing it. We're doing the thing.
Well, we've got one more big story we're going to get to on COVID, because the Biden administration is getting ready, folks. And I'm sure you're starting to see talk of lockdowns, talk of masking again, restrictions. It's coming, and get ready for it. Even though the CDC is kind of coming out and saying, no, we're not planning any sort of, oh yeah, you're full of shit. We know what you're up to. And we know what's about to happen with this new variant that's, being discussed. And it's impervious to all sorts of things. So this new variant, better watch out. That's the new scary tactics they're going to use. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. But first, we should tell you about, we should tell people about our store. We haven't done that in a while. And we've been away. So let's tell you about, we got our redacted store. I think we've been working on some new stuff, which hopefully will roll out soon at the redactedstore.com in time for the fall season here, the back to school season and into the Christmas holiday. Redactedstore.com is the perfect place to go to support independent media and to support what we do here, which is, we are not funded by billionaires and the corporate media backers. We are supported by you. So if you'd like to pick up a hat or a mug or a hoodie, the hoodies are really, really comfortable. Everything is really well made, but the hoodies are super warm and great for the fall as we start to head into the fall season here. So go to redactedstore.com right now. Check it out. Get a water bottle. Get something that you can get for the holidays or for yourself. Treat yourself and just be supporting what we do here. We're able to bring on independent journalists and give voice to stories that you can't find other places. So thank you guys so much for supporting our show. Redactedstore.com is the place to go.
All right.
Ready for COVID?
Hoodie season is masking season, is lockdown season.
Lockdown season.
Tis the season. God. Here we go, because we got a new strain of COVID. We got new warnings of mask mandates. We have new studies showing that masks contain toxic chemicals. It's time. It's time to put on your fighting gloves and talk about the pandemic, shall we?
You want to lose some more friends out there? We were talking with a woman on vacation. She's like, I lost friends. I lost friends for standing up for personal liberties. Like, I have, you know, family members.
Like a woman who took the vaccine and was speaking against vaccine mandates and lost friends because of it.
She's like, I took the vaccine and I was telling other people, no one should ever be forced to do that. And she's like, I lost friends because of it. Yeah. So you get ready to lose some more friends.
I don't have that many, so I have less to lose. Now, while we were away, we had a new strain of COVID and a plan for a new vaccine. And in fact, in just the last few hours, Karine Jean-Pierre says we are going to be pushing a new vaccine starting in September. I didn't have time to get that sound bite, but great.
That's
so let's
House, yeah.
look at what we've got to deal with. Now, the CDC says that this new variant is more likely to infect you if you got the vaccine previously.
Wait, repeat that.
I'm going to show it to you. This means that if you've been vaccinated for COVID, you are more prone to be infected by the new strain of COVID. This is effing crazy, you guys. It's the craziest thing. It is on the CDC's website, and I'm going to show it to you. So many people are going to wonder why they do that. Why we take that vaccine, meaning we're going to get the next one. We're more likely. So hold on to your hat. Now, here's the president on vacation in Lake Tahoe saying he has asked Congress to fund a new vaccine with your taxpayer dollars.
Mr. President, can you say anything about the uptick of COVID cases and new variants?
Yes, I can. Matter of fact, I signed off this morning on a proposal we have to present to the Congress a request for additional funding for a new vaccine that is necessary, that works. And tentatively, not decided finally yet, tentatively, it is recommended that, it would likely be recommended that everybody get it, no matter whether they got it before or not.
Okay, I apologize. I don't remember that being quite so inaudible. Who knows he's mumbling.
They love to do interviews by like an aircraft carrier or like a Harrier jet.
Right,
like
but he's also so indiscernible.
But I can paraphrase if you'd like. He just said, he just authorized this morning additional funding for a new vaccine.
Yeah.
A new COVID vaccine from your federal government.
Okay. So we're
paying for this one too, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Let's talk about as an American taxpayer, you may not want to pay for this thing given that the original vaccine did not do what they promised it would do and proved to be more dangerous than we were told. But recall that the last vaccines, at least we made some money back because the last vaccines used patents owned by the National Institute of Health or the NIH, and Pfizer and Moderna both paid big bucks to license those patents from the U.S. government. We found that out when Moderna fought not to pay quite so much. So whether or not you want a vaccine, at least it may be a good ROI on your taxpayer investment. Who cares if it works or hurts people, right?
Right.
Given that we are being told that COVID cases are on the rise, at least we'll, make some money back. Now, there's no way that anything that comes out of Big Pharma is going to be fully approved. We know this. The last COVID vaccines were only ever given emergency use authorization. And even now, RSV and postpartum depression drugs are fast-tracked through FDA approval. So zero chance this will get full clinical trials and full approval. We've discussed those recently at length. If you haven't seen those where we go over the RSV and the postpartum depression approvals, I recommend you refer back to them so you know the standards with which modern medicines are approved. So about that new variant, here it is. It's called the BA.2.86. This is the recent CDC warning about it. Now, I highlighted this at the bottom. Let's just zoom right into that, right? BA.2.86 may be more capable of causing infection in people who have previously had COVID or who have received COVID-19 vaccines. What? People who have had the vaccine are more susceptible to BA.2.86. What the actual shit, you guys? I'm sorry.
I mean, that's kind of convenient because you got that's your demographic. Those are the people you want taking it anyway. So it's like, hey, you already took it. So,
Yeah.
Right.
Taking it again. Take it. This time we're really going to get it right.
Yeah. I'm sorry I said the S word. It's my birthday. So please don't send me an email about it. I'm just going to take a privilege. But that feels like a subterfuge, don't you think? Why would we trust them now? The original vaccine may make you more susceptible to new COVID. It, you know, did more harm than they admitted, and you can still catch and spread it even if you take it. So what? I give up.
Roland in our chat, Roland Dusson says, redacted, that was the plan. That was the plan all along.
I guess, right.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
And we were warned that new variants would adapt in order to get around this vaccine. We just, you know, made fun of people who warned about it. Now, this feels like I give up, only I can't give up because I have questions. And while we are still allowed to ask those questions, we will ask those questions. But I do have questions about what questions I can ask, given that we are on YouTube and an updated YouTube policy says that YouTube doesn't allow content that, here's what they say, contradicts local health authorities or the World Health Organization. So this is a little concerning. This is the new mid-August update to YouTube's policies. And I think it's worth you seeing what we can talk about so that at least you know what the playing field is here. Now, obviously, this is like marching orders for me as a content provider, but also for you to know what you're being allowed to see, because the WHO did not give us consistent guidelines during the pandemic. We know this, right? But also, these bodies approve things based on what? And that's what we've been focused on here on Redacted, is when a new drug is approved, we look at the clinical trials and they look to us like not stellar grades, but still they're being approved. So can we then go through those clinical trials and ask why was that approved? Given, for instance, the FDA did authorize the new RSV vaccine for elderly people, but 11 people died in those trials. And so are we supposed to ask those questions, or should we just do what the mainstream media does and champion it and ignore those 11 people? Screw them.
Well, and can't,
right?
Yeah. Couldn't they reevaluate who they're considering their experts? Because like, if we would have been able to highlight the people that were consistent throughout and ended up being right the whole time, if we could just follow them instead and then use the others as a guideline, like, yeah, we'll look at what they're saying, but right, these are the people that were correct throughout, like,
right, that had the vaccine protocol, or had the, you know, the different treatment protocols, Dr. Peter McCullough, Pierre Corey, etc., who had
Malone,
who had, you know, who had treatment options that were working. And we're keeping people off of ventilators. Once people got on ventilators, of course, that was the problem. Once they got on ventilators, it was a death sentence.
Yeah. I'm extremely concerned about this because, you know, when we present, for instance, these RSV vaccines, we don't say to you, hey, you know, take this or don't. We don't say that at all. We just say, look at this clinical trial. Do you think that merits full approval? We have questions about it. These things show concerns. Will we be allowed to do that, or are we just supposed to say full approval, huzzah, right? Well, this seems to me to not be clear.
That's a very frustrating thing, because like, we got suspended once for reading Pfizer's own studies. We were reading the studies. We were reading their information. So like, if that's not okay.
Right. And they called it medical misinformation. And then we got, our show Redacted was redacted for a week, blocked. We couldn't post anything, because they claimed medical misinformation. But we appealed it. We said we were reading from Pfizer's own documents. Didn't matter.
I'm feeling like we are being primed with a playing field that will not allow us once again to discuss what's actually happening, like happened during the first pandemic, the first phase of the pandemic, I guess, now that we're given this new phase, BA.2.86. Now, the federal government is not supposed to be telling social media what to censor because of the federal case ruling that happened in July. So if we have a new vaccine and a new strain of COVID, maybe we'll be more free to discuss it this time around, even though YouTube has taken it upon themselves to decide to censor based on these new parameters. We've seen how the government punished and silenced speech around the vaccine and lockdowns. What about masks? Well, a new study from this spring shows that surgical masks used, the single-use ones, the N95s, contained all manner of toxic chemicals. This study was published in April, but it was shared by the National Institute of Health and surprisingly, shockingly, received very little media coverage. This study looked at the amount of what they are calling VOCs, volatile organic compounds, in COVID masks. They found that those single masks had concentrations of toxins between 22 and 147 times higher than cloth masks.
Oh, great. So
only the
in.
Cloth masks were shown ineffective at blocking out COVID particles. And also it was shown that breathing back in your own oxygen has a toxic effect. We've talked about those studies. And these toxins can be linked to health issues such as headaches, nausea, organ damage, cancer. What's worse, that some of these single-use masks had these toxic concentrations when the weather was hot, that they increased by a 119 to 299%.
Think about those poor kids in Italy. I remember the images we showed them here on the show. These are kids, and it was boiling hot. They don't have air conditioning. They don't believe in air conditioning, I think, in Italy at all. And seriously, it's like, and it's the worst. And they, in schools, like, these poor kids are in like uniforms and they're wearing masks and they're sweating their asses off and they're being forced to like breathe in these awful toxins in these masks. And there's absolutely no evidence at all that anything would have happened to them whatsoever if they were exposed to COVID. It would have made them stronger. Right. Yeah. And instead, they're breathing this toxic stuff that's now superheated. And oh, my God,
our kids had to wear it on the playground in September where it's hot here in Portugal. You know, they had to wear it inside and out for prolonged times. They didn't use the single use masks. They allowed the cloth masks, which we knew did not very much. But it also did mean that they had to breathe in their own oxygen, which has toxic effect. And we can't say, oh, we didn't know any better, because there were already studies. We've covered them at length, showing that masks can be toxic to children. We had them before the pandemic. We just shamed people for bringing it up as anti-maskers, so that like we didn't know. It doesn't cut it, because we actively suppressed that information that was already out there.
I used to get yelled at from people. Man, I would not put them on. I go in the hospitals. They're like, you got to put on a mask. I'm like, no, no, I'm not wearing this. You realize this is, and it was never again, never again. Go ahead, David.
Well, I was just going to say, and what Natalie's talking about, that is the danger of not listening to, like, politicizing everything.
Yes.
That's the danger of everything being political, because then all reason goes out the window because it's been politicized and you're on this side or that side, you know, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And just listen to the science, listen to the data. Here are the, well, you can't do it. You can't even post it on Facebook because it'll be banned.
Right. And it was equated with virtuosity. Someone who's willing to wear a mask and is willing to ignore any kind of contradictory science around it. Well,
They also can't go back on it. They can't go back and correct themselves, because then if people question, if they're like, oh, we were wrong on this one part, then people will ask, well, were you wrong on anything else? And they'll be like, well, no, you can trust us. We just had that one thing wrong. So it's like that. So now they've like dug that hole where, like you were saying, like that virtuosity, they've dug that hole. Now they have to be correct. So now they can't go back and change the data.
Yes, you can, though, if you just take a spoon of humility. There's a lot of stupid stuff that, like, I was wrong about because I was actively ignoring those things I was swallowing the BS.
But, I mean, look at Fauci, right? He came out saying in the beginning, he's like, you don't need masks. They don't even really work. Like, they don't even really do anything. Like, you don't need to wear masks. Like, they don't need to do that. And then suddenly he was like, yeah, now we need to wear masks every day. Everywhere you go, make sure you're wearing a mask. Make sure you're masking up everywhere you go.
Right.
Like, okay. And he, you know, years ago said the flu. Like, if you've already gotten the flu, you absolutely don't need to go and get a vaccine. He's like, that's the best defense you possibly have. He said it emphatically. So what was he saying 10 years ahead of time?
Right. I mean, you can be humble and say, I was wrong and I listened to the shaming of people that were asking legitimate questions.
Yeah.
And I fell for that. I say it all the time. And so, yeah, you absolutely can go back on those things if you are humble enough to do that and say, I wish I hadn't done that, right? And yet mask mandates are starting to pop back up. Joe Lodapo, the Surgeon General of Florida, rang in on this on Twitter this weekend, saying that people should consider refusing to participate. No, we've already covered that today is my birthday. That makes me a Virgo, and I am a rule follower. This makes me very uncomfortable. He's saying, how about refusing to participate?
I love it. I'm the rule breaker.
I'm going to hyperventilate a little bit because I don't like it. I mean, it's like, the thing that makes me uncomfortable is, like, for instance, it's not the person you're talking to that made the rule that has to enforce it. And so when you push against someone who's just like, these are the rules, you have to wear a mask in the hospital, I can't let you in otherwise, right? And so you're pushing about against that dude who's just like, you know, a paycheck employee. It's not right. I don't like this idea. But I'm going to tell you right now, there's no situation in which I'm going to send my asthmatic daughter back to school in a mask.
No, never, ever, ever again.
Absolutely not.
I will never, ever again. And I love the idea that he's saying, you know, if someone's calling on you to push on mask, you know, mask policies that have, as he says, proven ineffective, and restarting lockdowns, what he's saying, restarting lockdowns that are known to cause harm. We have monumental amounts of data now about the long-term effects of lockdowns, the depression, the setting children back years in development. Absolutely devastating to humanity what they did to us. Never, ever, ever again. We should stand up to this. We should never, ever listen to these people and question everything.
And I would say, fortunately for us in this round, the mainstream media at the end even started doing things on the what happened with the kids wearing masks that extended a period of time. So now we even have the mainstream establishment media to point back to and say, they just said this like 3 months ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think
probably
that
wipe it away, though. They'll hide it like they usually do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They always do. But
yeah.
Yeah. In catching up with the news today, Clayton and I were discussing this seriously. Like, what if they do come back to the school that our kids go to? What if, you know, mask mandates or vaccine requirements? We'll move.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
We'll move before we do that again to our kids. You know, I want to bring this up because I think that it's important to rewind the tape a little, because in the absence of a government that will make medical policy based on human need, what choice do we have? In the 1960s, we had a academic and a physician named Thomas Szasz, who was warning about what he calls pharmacocracy. He talked about how the Nazis actually used medicalization as a form of social control, and look how that worked out. And he warned us about how this is not what the founding fathers had in mind. I recently read his book, Pharmacocracy, and it really is informing how I feel about the increasing medicalization of everything, literally everything. I have fear of this or this that needs a pill or anxiety about this or whatever. This now has bled into our civil liberties. Here's what he said. He said the founding fathers sought to protect the American people from the religious tyranny of the estate, regardless of the religion. They did not anticipate and could not have anticipated that one day medicine would become a religion, and that an alliance between medicine and the state would then threaten personal liberty and responsibility exactly as they had threatened an alliance between church and state. They wrote separation of church and state into our Constitution because they realized that that is the only way that we can have freedom. But now that church has been replaced with an alliance between biopharmaceutical and state, we have lost our liberty. And he was right. And again, he was warning about this since the 1960s. He died before the pandemic, and he would have had so many I told you so's coming. I do recommend that you seek out the work of Thomas Szasz, because we are living in this post-apocalyptic nightmare where the separation of church and state is still one of our values, but we have no separation between biopharmaceutical and state, and we are screwed because of it. It's dangerous, and it's not making our lives better. So I'm just going to end on that. You let me know what you think, and that's what we have for you on this first show back.
Yeah. So guys, thank you. Go ahead, Phil.
I was just saying, I'm just really happy that bloodletting is no longer like the current like medical trend, because if the government was forcing that on everybody, I mean, but you kind of put that in perspective. I mean, that's like whatever the current medical trend is, they can force that on you. Like, yeah. I'm just glad that some of these things are not in prevalence anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, look, it was.
For how long?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exorcism for, you know, like certain ailments. Bloodletting, like things like this that would say, well,
that's
this
how
is
George Washington
do.
Died. I mean, they killed George Washington by bloodletting him. Like, this was like, yeah, well, you got this. We're going to let some blood out. Just going to drain some blood out. We have nothing else to cure you with. And then it was amputations. Oh, you got a thing, you got a problem in your foot. I'll just amputate it. So the amputations, and then,
yeah,
you know, and eugenics, you know, what's next? So, well, now we're just letting people cut off all parts of their bodies. So yeah, that's the way we go.
Now you can't be sad. Like, if you're sad, you're got to get on medication. Like,
oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he has this whole part about how the Nazis used, you know, cancer research to sort of take away civil liberties because they were doing some good things and then like a lot of bad. And he talks about how like there really is no mental illness. It's not a disease, a cellular disease on your brain. There is absolutely mental discomfort that we should socially support, but the biopharmaceutical industry does not have any business there. And this is creeping into every bit of our lives and making us weaker and putting people on a welfare state where they know, you know, are easy to control by the government. You know,
obedience.
We've bought into this. Yeah. We've bought into this when we agree that every little discomfort is an actual disease when it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, they want drones. They absolutely want drones so they can mm-hmm. have total control of them. And I say, question everything. I saw people in the chats agreeing with me. You know, the other day we were talking about authoritarianism and just authority. And I told my kids, I said, you should always question authority. Always question it.
Not mine, though.
Yes, you should. especially ours, but you should always question authority and should understand. You should ask the question it. Why is this rule in place? Why are you telling us to do this? Why? Explain it, make sure it's explained. And if it makes sense and it can, you know, it helps people, then okay. Then it's up to you to go along with it. You know, but if it helps lower entropy, right? Why is this rule in place that we don't kill other people? Does it help to lower entropy? Yes, it does. It helps us to make a more peaceful and better place, right? Right?
Yeah. I don't know where you're going with this.
I'm just saying there are certain rules that, yes, it makes sense, right? Well, forcing us into lockdowns and mask mandates. And why? Why are you doing this? Why are you forcing people to be out on a playground or, you know, they can't order certain types of food at a bar during a lockdown, but you can go to this establishment or get your dog washed at this building, but you can't get your dog washed over here at a...
I get what you're saying, because you're saying, like, with your kids, for instance, like, if I say this, then if it doesn't make sense, ask me why. It's like, if you ask us to do this, just make sense of it. If they could have made sense of lockdowns and showed us data instead of hiding it and trying to hide everything for 75 years, maybe we could get on board with information. But right. It's like, if you're making decisions like that and listening to people with no information, that's just control.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're blocking other voices.
We've handed our liberties mm-hmm. over to the biopharmaceutical complex to our peril. And, you know, the sort of things that we're talking about, like mental illness, these social discomforts have existed for, you know, all of humanity, gender dysphoria or what have you. And there were social organizations in place in order to help with those things, you know, anxiety or what have you, postpartum depression. The answer is not a biopharmaceutical company that takes away our liberties to question those things. So then why now might I not be able to question pharmaceutical trials of a postpartum depression drug, because that's been taken from us as a society, right? And so I'm not saying that people don't suffer from mental maladies. That doesn't make it a disease that then we should give up our society for. So anyway, I'm free to have this debate any other time, but it's getting late. That's all we've got for you tonight. And so we will see you here tomorrow. Do you want to say something?
I would love to. I would love to tell people where they can get our newsletter. We don't often get to tell people about that, and we've been away for a week. So sign up for our daily newsletter. We are back. Again, it's totally free. Go to redacted.inc, put in your email address, sign up for the newsletter, and it publishes about 7 a.m. You can read it over your cup of coffee first thing in the morning, and it's a great newsletter. Again, it takes you about 5 or 10 minutes to read it. We kind of get you caught up on some of the big stories that we've been covering overnight while you've been asleep. And again, it's a great time. We try to make you laugh a little bit. We get you really informed, and then you're out the door on your way. So go to redacted.inc is the place to sign up for the daily newsletter. And we will be back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Thank you all for joining us. We really appreciate it, and great to have you back here on this Monday. We'll see you guys once again tomorrow. Bye, everyone.